Moncrief on News Talk.
If the poorer countries of the world haven't even started getting any yet, a global vaccine sharing fund called COVAX hopes to start delivering in February, but it is in competition with other countries prepared to pay way over the odds to get the vaccine before them. Helen Rees of the Global Alliance for Vaccine and Immunisation joins us now on News Talk. Helen, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thank you for having me.
Now, we've been in kind of a similar situation to this before in terms of the H1N1 vaccine.
Yes, absolutely. And I would have hoped that we'd learnt, and in a way we did with COVAX that you've just mentioned. But as you say, in 2009, when we had pandemic flu, what happened there was that the rich countries of the world purchased all the vaccine. And it was months after the pandemic had been and gone before any vaccine came into, for example, the African region. With a pandemic like this, you cannot allow that to happen, not only morally, but just from an epidemiological point of view. It would be a disaster not to try and immunize all countries.
Now, and give us some sense of, for the poorer countries, particularly in your continent, how much vaccine, if any, are they getting?
Well, many of the poorer countries in the African region are part of the COVAX facility. What the COVAX facility has done, it's an internationally established funding mechanism to support all countries who want to join up to it, but especially to support the poorer countries, very small countries, and there are 92 of them in the world, to get access to vaccines. Because by having a lot of countries, there's 190 countries have now signed up. By having so many countries, there's big bargaining power in terms of access to vaccines, negotiations on price. But on the other side, for countries, you can start to assure countries who would otherwise be at the bottom of the list, the poorer countries, that you will get up to 20% of your country's needs in the first instance. And then, you know, hopefully we'll have many more vaccines and this vaccine fight that's going on over scarce resources will be alleviated.
From the COVAX point of view, do you depend on other countries to kind of approve, having vetted the data on these particular vaccines?
Yes. In fact, COVAX is coordinated overall by Gavi and WHO and a number of other big international organizations, but also has, there are big donors and bilateral countries who are involved in this. So when we look at which vaccines to secure, there are independent committees that look at all of the features of the vaccines and then make recommendations. So they look at all the scientific data and make recommendations. But in parallel to that, the World Health Organization is also doing a process called pre-qualification. It's a bit like you would have in Ireland, where your national drug regulatory authority would license a product. It's the same thing, similar thing that WHO does. And that allows an assurance that this is a quality vaccine that will work.
And in the situation where you get the vaccine to the poorer countries, do you have a role in then disseminating the vaccine?
Well, for the COVAX facility, the Gavi does have a role because it supports the countries and it supports the immunization and health systems of those countries. But the World Health Organization also has a major role. They have produced all sorts of tools that countries are using to say, you know, what are the critical things that have to be in place for us to introduce these vaccines? Normally, we give vaccines all over the world. We commonly give vaccines to infants and young children. We're not nearly as good at giving vaccines to adults. And yet most countries will be prioritizing healthcare workers. They'll be prioritizing older people, as you've seen in the United Kingdom. These are not groups that traditionally we've targeted for vaccines. So all of these measures have to be evaluated in a country before a vaccine would be shipped. Because if you can't distribute, those vaccines will be wasted.
What about countries where perhaps, and I'm thinking of one particular country, where they're denying there is any COVID? I'm thinking of Tanzania.
Well, you know, one of the problems in the African region is that surveillance, because we have very poor resources in terms of surveillance, we're not as good at doing surveillance. And that means we're also not as good at screening to pick up the virus, and also not as good at recording deaths. Although on paper it would look like a lot of countries haven't got such a bad outbreak as you're seeing in, say, Europe, I think that that's hidden behind probably inadequacy of data collection. But for sure, there's no border in the African region that will keep this virus out. And we are pretty certain that every country is affected. I work closely with WHO in the region, and that is certainly a reality, I'm sorry to say.
So next month, Helen, do you have a definitive number as to how much vaccine you'll be able to get your hands on and distribute?
For the COVAX facility, and I'm on the Gavi board, so I'm not actually working, as a COVAX person and so on. I'm a board member of Gavi. But the aim would be this year to secure as much as, certainly 2 billion doses was the first ambition, but it looks like now it could be 2.5 billion doses. And what we would do through the COVAX facility is ensure that all the countries that had signed up to this facility had sufficient vaccines to cover 20% of their population, all countries.
Yeah.
After that, once there's more vaccine, then we would be able to obviously cover a much higher percentage of the population, which unfortunately is what is needed to break this pandemic.
Because certain countries are trying to get their hands on the Russian vaccine. What would be the Gavi position in terms of whether that's been approved or not?
Well, the COVAX facility has an independent review group that's looking at every vaccine that's coming out with this phase three clinical trial data. And they're talking to all of the manufacturers, including the Russians, including Chinese, all manufacturers who've got data and are interested in putting their vaccines through the COVAX facility are being reviewed. So clearly what has to happen is you've got to have data to demonstrate that your vaccine is safe and efficacious. And that data has to come from these large phase three clinical trials.
Mm. Going back to the issue of borders, it's probably not practical for any country in Africa to close a border completely, or is it?
This is true throughout the world. I mean, in many parts of the world, borders are very porous, and particularly land borders. And many reasons for that, partly because it's very difficult to have the finances to have rigid, tight borders. But more importantly, very often people have jobs, relationships, that there are geographical and social reasons why people cross the borders every day in some cases. And that's true for many regions of the world. It's true for the African region, but it's true for many regions of the world. So movement of people across borders is really a necessity in terms of the cultural relationships, but also the economic relationships. So indeed, it is very hard to just close down those, particularly the land borders. International air travel is a much easier thing to control, but informal land borders are much more difficult.
Now, Helen is speaking to us from South Africa. So how is the situation in South Africa right now?
Well, you probably heard that, worldwide there have been three variants that have emerged. One emerged in the UK, one in Brazil, and one in South Africa. And the one of the common characteristics of these variants, as has been seen in the UK, is that they seem to be more transmissible, more easy to spread from one person to another. And as a result of that, in South Africa, we've had a very intense second wave, which has had much higher numbers than the first wave, and higher hospitalizations, higher deaths. And we are sure that this is a much more transmissible virus. One of our concerns is, and it's been looked at not only in South Africa, but worldwide, is whether these variants, what impact they will have on the vaccines that we currently have access to. I think we're all optimistic that because the human immune system is pretty robust and has more than one way of attacking the virus, that even if there's some reduction of the efficacy of these vaccines, that they would retain activity even against the new variants. But This is very important work that's ongoing. But in the meantime, the intention is certainly to roll out vaccines as quickly as we can. And we're hoping to have some of the AstraZeneca vaccine, just small amounts of 1.5 million next month.
And in South Africa at the moment, is there a lockdown or what kind of measures have been taken?
Yes, well, we had a very, very draconian lockdown in the first wave, which was highly effective and flattened that wave completely. But of course, when you took your foot off that pedal, then cases came back. In this case, because many countries in this region and in fact worldwide, you can't to keep closing the economies. Absolutely, it will possibly create more deaths than COVID because of hunger and other diseases emerging because of lack of access to health services and lack of income. So although we've got a lot of lockdown measures here, people are not rigidly confined to their homes, but face mask wearing in public is compulsory. We've actually banned alcohol completely. And the reason for that is really twofold. One is because we think that a lot of the cases we're seeing are driven by mass gatherings. And a great way to have a mass gathering is either to go to the pub or the party or a nightclub. So we've banned alcohol for that reason, and we have a curfew from 9 o'clock at night. But the more important reason for banning it is to stop the overload of hospitals, because particularly at weekends, month end, etc., the use of alcohol or the misuse of alcohol really floods our hospitals with road traffic accidents, with fights and disputes and stabbings, etc., etc. And this has been highly effective in reducing the strain on the hospitals in our setting and allowing people to focus on the many COVID patients.
And from your experience in South Africa, and this is, I think, an experience that's been replicated all over the world, certainly in this country, the difficulty isn't with instituting a lockdown. It's how you go about some sort of graduated way of opening things up again without people going, oh, my God, I'm allowed out of my house, or I'm allowed to go for a beer, and then everyone goes nuts.
I think that's the state of human nature, isn't it? I think what you're describing has happened in every country of the world. It certainly happened in South Africa over the summer period. I think that was what you also found, you know, particularly in the summer period, which we've just had. Remember, we're Southern Hemisphere. People go away. They go back to their homes. They travel. They cross local borders. And they want a party. They want year end relaxation with family. They want a party, and that's also contributed to this very steep second wave that we're in the middle of at the moment.
Helen, thank you so much for speaking with us today, and best of luck and stay safe. Helen Rees is chair of the Programme and Policy Committee at Gavi. That's the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunisation. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We're going to take a break after that. Farming.
Moncrief on News Talk.